Cattle Call Podcast. Man, we are 11/12 of the way through 2020. Crazy. At this time last year, November of 2019, I had decided on the name Cattle Call, had started talking to friends about it, sharing the vision, and fast forward a year later, here we are. We're 20-something episodes into the podcast, and I'm on what I believe is my fourth Smoke and Mirrors reflection. It is November 30th, 2020. I'm home for the holidays, and it is the holidays indeed. Thanksgiving is done, and it is snowing here in the outskirts of Nashville, Tennessee. I have to go in my garage because I can't just sit outside because of the snow. So I'm in my garage, smoking a cigar, watching the snow, watching people come home from work. Of course, it's daylight savings now, so it's super dark. I don't think, daylight savings hadn't happened last Smoke and Mirrors. So it's already dark, and it's snowy, and it's cold, but we are here. What a great month of November. So for all of those listening later or listening right now when I release this thing, November 2020 will be one of the most historic months ever for a lot of reasons, not just for the world, but not just for America, but for the world as well. Man, where do we begin? The month started with a release of one of my episodes. I can't remember what day, but it was pretty early in the month. It was Luke Riley. So again, before I kind of get into the reflection time, just a huge, huge thank you to everybody, all the listeners, all the people who continue to encourage me and give me feedback. Not just that, I did one special edition episode I'll probably touch on during this about the election, and I got a ton of feedback and just stuff like that. That is great. That is so helpful, and I like to see people engaged. I don't get anything out of this. Again, it's not like the more that you praise it, promote it, engage it, you know, the more money I get. I haven't made a dime on this. I just solely do this because I enjoy it. Of course, that might change if I have a potential sponsorship in the works. But so far, it's just been people sending feedback, and it's been great. It's been very well received. So I just want to continue to thank everybody. I want to thank everybody just doing everything. Those working, you know, providing services during this time, thank you. If there's one thing that coronavirus or the COVID-19 coronavirus has taught us, it's that every job is truly essential and it does take a village. So thank you to everybody who works. Thank you to everybody who does everything. Continue to work, provide services, all the people contributing to just the local economies wherever they are. Hope we don't ever take that for granted ever again. So thank you to everyone. Thank you to all the first responders, fire, you know, police, EMT, paramedics, of course, military of all branches. Everybody just working to serve a very divided country during this time and protect their communities. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And again, to everybody who's listened and contributed to Cattle Call, thank you very much. Okay. Luke Riley. He was a fantastic guest. One thing I love about doing this podcast is that I get to get so much deeper into just people's lives. And Luke was one of these guys that I really hadn't gotten to know at all. I knew very, very little about him. I knew he graduated from Mississippi State. I knew he worked somewhere in the golf community professionally. Didn't really know everything he did, but I know he did that. And that's honestly about all I knew. I knew his wife, Haley, because I knew her sister prior to meeting both of them. So I knew a little bit about him and his family. That's about all I knew about Luke. So if you haven't listened to Luke Riley episode, he was born and raised in Long Island, New York, came down to Mississippi State in Starkville, Mississippi for college, went there for professional golf management, graduated from there, moved back to New York, and ended up moving to Memphis when a spot opened up at Windyke Country Club. And as a golf pro at the course opened up, one of his buddies who worked at the course in Memphis called him and said, hey, man, you ought to come apply for this job. So Luke moved down to Memphis, took the job, really had nothing else going for him in New York, he said, so he had no reason to stay. So he came down to Memphis and took the job, ended up coming to Christ through a pastor at a church in Harvest, and or a church in Memphis called Harvest, church at, yeah, at Harvest, and came to Christ on the golf course. So now he spends his days giving golf lessons. Here's the cool thing about Luke. So the day after he came over for the podcast, it was just me and him at the house. And we got to know each other, got real close, and had a great, great, great time with him. And then the next day, I'm at the driving range with a buddy, one of these people that's helped get me into golf here, teaching me things. And him and I are at the range just hitting a couple days before a golf tournament I'm going to be in. And Luke Riley's there, comes down the range, talks to all the people, lets them know, you know, they're going to be closing soon, whatever. Well, he comes down to the very end of the range where me and buddy Hunter are, and talks to us. He knew both of us, so we talked for a few minutes, and he watched me, you know, hit a couple balls and correct my grip and changed it, and may have absolutely saved my golf game in about 30 seconds. So it's just kind of cool. Kind of felt like a celebrity when he's walking down, talking to all these people on the course. Then he comes down to the end and he sees people he recognizes. But yeah, I mean, Luke is about it, man. So he, yeah, again, in 30 seconds, completely changed my golf game. And so that's just cool. It was cool that he kind of came into my world the day before. The next day, he helped me in his world. So Luke was great. When I got done with Luke's interview, I think that might have been maybe the first, if not first, the second episode that I got done recording. And as soon as I got done, I felt like, this is why I did the podcast. This is why I started it. That was the model I was going for. And just the way it was, just the whole thing unfolded, the conversation of it all, the kind of content we covered. And of course, every episode I'm trying to become better at interviewing and keeping things concise and not making it about me and asking questions that'll open things up, show you more about the person, get them to share more of their beliefs or their stories or whatever it is, and not keep it as surface level, but also ask stuff that's not your typical icebreaker stuff, just so people can know more about who the guest is. And so I felt like when I got done with Luke, he was one of those episodes that accomplished kind of the goal of the podcast, and it felt productive. And Luke was just a great guy. You feel so much closer to somebody afterwards. So that was just one of those very impactful episodes, because it took somebody that, if I saw him out and about, I'd shake his hand, I'd know his name, I'd say hi, but I don't know much more about him. And by the end of it, you feel so close, you feel so much more knowledgeable. It, you know, your relationship just, it transcends everything that was surface level before. And now it's, I understand more and just admire somebody more. And having people get to hear that, that's just such a cool gift. So Luke, great, great job on your episode. Come back anytime. Hope to have your wife on soon. She wants to come on a podcast, or they've even talked about starting maybe they're a young married couple. So maybe even a nice marriage podcast. So I hope you guys get to do it. All right. Anne Marie Wyatt. That is my next guest. That was the first guest of all of Cattle Call podcast that I had no prior relationship with at all. Even guys like Luke that I really didn't know, but I knew of, or people that I've met a couple times doing things or just kind of been in contact with or whatever. I had no knowledge at all about Anne-Marie until my girlfriend Bailey and I went down to Oxford, Mississippi, which is about an hour south of Memphis, where Ole Miss is. Got to keep my cigar going here. I always do this. I always talk too much. So I went down to Oxford and got to meet her. So I'd never seen a picture of her. Didn't know much of her life. And a little bit of email back and forth, getting the dates down so we could go interview. That was it. So Anne-Marie was the first, pretty much, I would say, complete stranger. And that was so cool because it took a whole new... approach to interviewing. When you truly don't know anything about the person, there's parts that are harder because you come in with no prior knowledge and there's really no way for you to do research. But also, personally, like, I like meeting people for the first time. I'd rather meet somebody for the first time and get to know them than catch up with somebody who I've, you know, known for years. There's something, I guess just the way that I'm wired, I love meeting people for the first time. So that was just cool getting to be able to do that on a podcast. And she had a blast. We both had a blast. The people around us, there were a couple people in the studio with us, and they all thought it turned out well. Her dog, Kodak, who she called Coco, was also around. But then her assistant, Mackenzie, who photographed the wedding I was in. That's how I got the connection to Anne Marie. Mackenzie was there. My girlfriend Bailey were there. And Mackenzie and Bailey both thought it went well. I thought it went well. It was just cool. That was another one where I left, and it felt productive because this was a whole new side that you've tapped into of podcasting, was interviewing a complete stranger and getting to know somebody that you just wouldn't have otherwise met. Hear their take, hear their stories. That was just cool. It was a great experience. Honestly, it's an invaluable experience and definitely boosted my confidence in talking to strangers on the podcast. If someone comes on who I have no prior knowledge of, one thing that is kind of easy, of course, we all know this, when you know somebody, there's that comfort is there and the familiarity is there. But, you know, if you kind of hit like a roadblock in your conversation, you can kind of pull from prior knowledge of, okay, well, you know, let's talk about this time in your life when I knew you, or I know you're interested in this, you can talk more about it. Just because, you know, I know something about you, you can resort to something like that. And, you know, when someone's a complete stranger, you don't have any of that. It's like, okay, I've got to find out more information now. So, and I guess just knowing that you're recording, you're kind of, you know, quote, on the air, there's a little bit more pressure to it if you really think about it, because then you go, what if I can't think of a question? So you can sit here with this dead air with nobody talking for 6 seconds, and it's awkward. Now we both try to come in and talk and interrupt each other. So thankfully there's none of that. But yeah, it was a great experience. And it was also nice talking to somebody who is just in the next stage of life, where, you know, she has 3 young kids and has a husband and started her own small business. Her husband started his own small business, and hearing their experiences and kind of what they're doing now. Because one thing that I've become very, very passionate about, because of, hold on, I'm stepping away from the mic here. I'm going to relight my cigar again. You would think it's my first time. One thing I became very passionate about through COVID was small businesses as a whole. Because different states have had different results, of course, depending on a lot of different factors, but hundreds of thousands of small businesses throughout America shut down and will never reopen because of the pandemic. And at the same time, businesses like Amazon, Walmart, you know, Target, Apple, Netflix, boomed. Netflix, or Amazon, has doubled their net worth, their revenue. Jeff Bezos, the owner, founder, he has doubled his net worth. And these places are having double and triple their revenue that they had this time last year because of it. And at the same time, middle class America is just, you know, wasting away. So there's this, I guess, a respect. There's more of a respect now when you're sitting there talking to a small business owner who also, when you're doing a lot of commercial photography and then places are either closed or they're having to like tighten their belts because of the pandemic, they're not going to hire a photographer. And then weddings, you know, where you can't gather more than, you know, 8 people or whatever it may be in certain places, you're not going to be doing a whole lot of wedding photography. So a lot of their bread and butter to their business was, I don't know, it's jeopardized through it all. But, you know, they've emerged and they're doing really, really well now. And then, you know, her husband, a small business owner, and thankfully he was probably still essential, being landscaping. I know when I was working over the summer, it'd usually be about us and contracting and construction, and landscaping crews would be out and about, and that was about it. But seeing these small business owners in small town America, you know, going through this thing, honestly being put through the ringer, it feels like you're talking to someone who's just defeated some monster. And you go, how did you do it? That's almost how it feels the whole time talking to someone like Anne Marie. And man, we just had the best time. They were so, her and McKenzie both were just so hospitable. Anne Marie has a great personality. She didn't know how it would turn out, but after she listened, she loved it. And we've been invited back down to do another one at some point, and we would absolutely love to. I know I'd love to go back down to Oxford. Had a great time just the whole time being down there and just hearing her story. So definitely there, that was going to be one of those pivotal episodes I'll look back on, and I'll see that's where something started to change for me as a question asker. Dakota, again, as I opened the podcast with, if you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, it's all right. It's long, and it just came out a couple days ago, so I haven't given people much warning. But as I say in the intro, Dakota is the guest I've known for the longest. Technically met him coming up on 10 years ago. Yeah, 10 years ago now. We weren't really friends until college when we were both in Memphis for architecture school, and got real close then. Kind of having that common background of, you know, from the same suburb and same age, similar interests, stuff like that. So had a really good time. Had really been looking forward to talking with Dakota. Him and I talked a couple times over the summer. We've always been, you know, big cigar guys. We've always smoked a lot together. Had some real deep spiritual talks. We were, you know, in Bible studies together for years at Memphis. So we're just close. It was cool just getting to hang out and just kind of talk and, you know, ask him questions I already know the answers to. It's like the whole opposite of Anne Marie. And then because of that too, you also want to find out stuff that you don't know. So then how do you start asking questions in a way to find out answers to things that you don't already know? And it's tough when you live with a guy for a couple years and know a lot about their life, seen him go through multiple relationships and chapters and interests and hobbies and jobs and whatever it may be. So it's okay, how do I dig deeper, or how do I just, you know, break ground in a whole new area of this guy's life to find out more? So just had a good time hanging out. Always have a good time hanging out with Dakota. We went down and smoked a cigar before and came back and made a fire and got to sit outside and just talk it up, man. It was a really good time. One thing about that episode, sorry, I got to get this thing going again. He talked about his thesis project for grad school, where he's getting his master's of architecture. And Binghamton is a low-income area east of downtown Memphis, a few miles, probably 5 miles or something. And the area he was working in for his thesis and also doing multiple projects through architecture school is one of the opportunity zones that Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, he kind of spearheaded it, and then Trump backed it up. He brought it up during the State of the Union address. First time I've ever heard about it. But it's pretty much where corporate businesses, you know, things private sector, they can sponsor areas of cities that need help, and instead of the government going in with, you know, taxpayer dollars and trying to fix areas, you know, somewhere like in Memphis where FedEx is pretty much have their name on about everything in that city because they bring in billions a year. They pretty much created a lot of overnight and international shipping. So someone like them, they could go into this area and they could say, hey, we're going to sponsor this and we're going to pour some of our money into this area to help the community out, to create jobs, to give kids, you know, better access to education, maybe even buy shoulder pads for a youth football team, whatever it may be. But they can go in this area and they can pretty much sponsor it and help just provide resources and education and stuff like that to an area. And the area that Dakota picked for his thesis was one of those opportunity zones, come to find out. So that's pretty cool that a lot of people can look at stuff and they can go, all right, this area has a lot of potential, has a lot of great people, has a lot of great history and culture. And, you know, Binghamton has a lot of old industry there, and now it's a big arts district. But at the same time, that's also an area of the city where a lot of refugees from Africa, the Middle East, Central, South America have come, and they've set up shop there. So it's predominantly black, like black American, but there's a lot of diversity just in that area too. And there's a lot of young stuff. There's, you know, microbreweries, and there's, again, there's boutiques because of it. There's the arts district, so they have different studios and stores. So it really is just very diverse in a lot of senses of the word area. And now you're getting to see these people look at it and go, all right, how do we help them out, fix this area up and take care of our community? So that's where he was working. Overall, as a podcast, of course, like I said, just had a good time with Dakota. Always do. And it was also cool to see, this is me personally, you probably didn't pick up on the podcast, but Dakota has changed a lot over the last couple of years. He's become a lot more spiritual, and his knowledge of the Bible and Christianity and stuff has grown. It's just been changed. Like for a lot of us, you know, when you leave the house, a lot of stuff changes. But he's also become a lot more political into some of the stuff I have interest in. He's now become interested in, and he's become very, very conservative, which is not how he was in the past. So, because he just didn't really have interest in a lot of the stuff going on, and now, so seeing him shift and his mind, the way he's thinking, that's starting to shift, was also kind of cool to see. So I kind of knew that, and it wasn't really captured, I don't think, in the podcast, just because it wasn't supposed to be. But yeah, just had a good time. Okay. I recorded it in November, but it won't come out till December 4th, which is Friday. My buddy Michael Thomas, so I'm just going to go ahead and promote that one. That'll be out Friday. That was a very fun episode. Probably the longest episode I've ever done, so I'll split it up in two. But that'd be good when we talk about a lot of things. Talk a lot about, from what I recall, history, comedy, personal stories, his dad. He comes from an SEC football officiating family. So talked a little bit about stuff like that, little personal things, some of his cultural experiences. So stuff like that. So we just had a really good time. And I'm excited for that episode to come out. And then lastly, I guess one episode I'll kind of touch on for a second is the election episode I did. It was a reflection on the election, even though it's still, to this day, on November 30th, not done, and probably won't be done for a while. That one, I relied on a lot of feedback from people, and I got a lot of it, so thank you to everyone who contributed, or listened, or whatever you did. That was, I think, a very beneficial episode that had a lot of preparation go into it. And got a lot of, I guess, feedback before I recorded. People wanted to hear about it, wanted to hear what people were saying. They were looking forward to it. Like I said, my buddy Weston, who also has a Long Run podcast, he gave me his camera because he wanted to give me the ability to film it, because he just thought it'd be just a pretty important episode. So just little things like that. So that was a very fun episode. Very burdened. I mean, you're sitting there talking about why everyone voted the way they did, or believe what they believe, or kind of getting this consensus of people's views on things. And I'm very involved in, not me personally, what I do, but just my interest in politics. I watch a ton of news and try to keep up with a lot of stuff going on. So, of course, it's interesting. So I have no problem talking about it. So, of course, I enjoy doing stuff like that, but also I love hearing why people think the way they do. So I got a lot of great feedback for people on that. So that was good. That just kind of talked about why, you know, why people voted for who they voted for, and then kind of what it was showing me. And really, a lot of their reasons, probably what, if you have conversations with friends or family or strangers, you probably reach the same conclusion, and people have the same kind of reasons for voting for someone. It was nice because there was really no immaturity involved in any of it. Nobody bashed the other side. Nobody, would sling mud at the other person. They just kind of talked about, like, a lot of it was, you know, they vote for Biden because they don't like Trump, but it wasn't like, you know, Trump and all his supporters are a bunch of blah, 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 blah. It was never that. It was like, maybe I don't like the rhetoric, so I voted for Biden. It was never, even through that, like, whether I agree with them or not, people were all very, like, mature, very diplomatic, and everyone had their reasoning behind it. It was kind of nice to see, like, with the exception of really, like, one person that I mentioned in the episode, Nobody just arbitrarily picked somebody, and nobody was immature about it. So that was refreshing to see, and also kind of shows, okay, like there is still a lot in America that we can salvage, and it's not nearly as extreme as stuff like the media will showcase, because all media, I would go as far as say all media have a bias, all major media, and yeah, they're always going to pick extreme examples to, you know, showcase another side and keep us further, you know, divided and pitted against one another. So it's just tough. Now, of course, with that being said, it doesn't mean stuff isn't going on. It's not like, oh, don't believe any of that because it's not that extreme. There is a lot of extreme stuff going on. I don't want that to be missed. I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm saying. It's, oh, I don't believe it. I would argue I'm pretty woke in a lot of the stuff going on. Like, read a ton of articles. And it's great because I get articles sent to me by people and podcasts sent to me by people. And I'm always appreciative of that because I get to learn a lot more and see a lot more. So there is a lot of stuff going on, whether it's below the surface or a lot of stuff we're just very upfront about now. We're talking about, and I think a lot of it's ridiculous. I'm sure a lot of people do, no matter what side you're on. Okay, so kind of personally, here we're going to figure this out real quickly. Got a lot going on here, trying to manage, looking through my notes here and keep my cigar going and make sure my coffee doesn't get cold and my bourbon doesn't get warm, I guess. Also, shout out to my dad for the space heater out here in the 30, I don't even know if it's 30 degrees, probably lower than that now. Yeah, 31. Love that. Okay. So, kind of my little reflection to end things on for the month as a whole of November. Personally, I mean, it was a good month. Finished up the semester, had to do a lot of work, so didn't get to do as much a lot of the things that I wanted, but yeah, good. Finished The Four Loves by C.S. Lewis. I've been working on that one for a little bit. That's a good book. I'd recommend it. Definitely not, I wouldn't say the first C.S. Lewis book. Someone should read it if they've never read him. It's pretty hard to wrap your mind around a lot of that stuff. He's very, very, very intellectual. So there's stuff that has to be read several times or looked up. It's always kind of fun to read somebody that you kind of, you got to put your finger there on the sentence, go, okay, hold on, I got to stop there because I got to look up three words to understand what he's trying to say. So very, very smart guy, very wise guy, and talked about, if I remember right, it was friendship, charity, Eros, and Isaac Weston. Did I say it? Okay, affection. I don't know if I said that one. So yeah, so it's friendship, affection, Eros, and charity are the four loves he kind of talks about. So it's a good book. I mean, I definitely recommend it. Anything that has C.S. Lewis's name on it, I would definitely recommend. So finish that up. About to start The Abolition of Man. That's by C.S. Lewis as well. And another book on evangelism by Mark Dever. So I'll hopefully have both of those done. Probably not, but hopefully have both of those done on next Smoke and Mirrors so I can talk about it. Another, I had a good article someone sent me. Tim Keller wrote, kind of comes to mind with kind of how I want to close the reflection up, but he talked about a lot of the political stuff going on now, social justice and all the political, just actually the parties, and as a Christian, how Christians are supposed to navigate that and, you know, weigh things against the other and make decisions for themselves. That was a pretty good article. I'll have to mention it in my maybe on the next one, or I think I'll do a special edition next month anyway, and I'll probably mention it so I can give you the name. But yeah, that was good. And then I listened to a couple of good podcasts, surprisingly, or at least surprising other people. I'm not really a big podcast guy. I don't listen to a whole lot of podcasts at all. Even when people send them to me, it takes me a while to get to them. But I did listen to a couple of good ones that were Views from the Porch, which is like a young adults Christian ministry out of I believe they're out of Dallas. And they had two episodes I listened to back to back, one with Charlie Kirk and one with Ali Best Stuckley. And they're two conservative young voices. Charlie Kirk started Turning Point USA, which is pretty much like a college organization. They're both conservative. Of course I'm conservative, so I like them. But since it was a ministry one, they were talking more about how you, you know, view your politics through the lens of your religion. So for Christians, it's through your Judeo-Christian worldview, seeing things through that lens. And Charlie Kirk, I don't really listen to him a whole lot or whatever. But he made some really good points, which are the same kind of things I'd been saying or thinking the entire election season, especially through all the COVID stuff. I've been talking to people about it, so I'll talk more about that in a second. Ali Beth, the one thing that still sticks with me about that was she talked about how your politics are always downline of your theology. So the way you view anything political is all determined by the way you view anything theological. So, which, I mean, of course, you may look at that like a math theorem and be like, yeah, well, duh. Like, yeah, we all knew that. But when you think about why people think the way they do, and it truly never is about like color, you know, or animal or whatever affiliation, or, you know, pick an issue, the way one side views it versus the other, versus people that are in the middle or whatever it may be. I think, especially as a Christian, like, man, you're a Christian before you're anything else. I think for me personally, I try to remember that, you know, before I'm anything at all, I'm a Christian. So that should always determine the way I view or act or behave or think or speak or react, whatever it is. I'm a Christian. After that, I'm a man. I believe there's only a man and a woman. I believe that's all there are out there. So I think that, okay, if this is who God has made me, he's made me a man, what does that mean for me? Because my responsibility now is, okay, what does it mean to be a man? And then you talk about, you know, protect, provide, whatever it is. There's different roles. I think, you know, God gave men specific roles. He gave women specific roles. And they don't have to be the same role. They don't have to be in competition. They complement each other. They don't compete with one another. So after that, I'm a man. So I think, hey, what does it mean for me as a man in this situation? What am I supposed to do or say or whatever? And then after that, I'm an American. You know, America, you know, that it is. It's our country, and we have to be faithful, and we do need to fight to protect it. I know there's been a lot of, oh, it's overrated, or I don't love it, or I'll get more of that in 1 second. But at the end of the day, if you're an American, now if you're another country person, that's where your allegiance is to. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not that it is a competition where it's like, oh, my country is better than yours for this reason. I mean, that's where it is. Like, you should want to fight to protect and preserve. And if it is bad or something bad is going on, you should want to change it. You don't want evil to prevail. But your allegiance is to that. But first, you know, I'm a Christian, I'm a man. After that, I'm an American. So that kind of determines. So when I think about the, yeah, my political ideologies, those are downline of my theologies. And that makes perfect sense, but I just like the way she put it. Okay, and that's kind of my last little, reflection was, I wrote a blog post on November 5th, and it was, you know, a couple days after election day, but of course, nothing, even to this day, nothing's official. But I was pretty much talking about how I was seeing a lot of people, you know, voicing their opinions, just like I'm doing here and on my blog. And, you know, my opinion was, as a conservative, when I look around at all this stuff going on, as a conservative, and then me and all the other people like me, we only have ourselves to blame. When we see stuff that we don't like or we don't agree with, but it's happening, it's not the fault of the other people. And of course, we're now in a society where, and I'm guilty of it too, but it's never our fault. It's always this, there's all these other variables, and maybe it's somebody else or whatever. But blame shifting, that never gets anything accomplished at all, and it makes you look worse. You ever been around somebody that all they do is complain, and it's never their fault, or they get defensive or whatever it is? And I know I've been guilty of it. I know that sometimes I just can't take critique, or that I'm very set in my ways, whatever it is. But I've also been around people that every time they open their mouth, they're complaining about something. And that's so unbecoming. That's not somebody you want to hang around. And it's kind of the same where it's like, oh, it's the fault of this, you know, the evil, whatever. You know, people are like, oh, look at the evil, rabid Marxist Democrats that hate America, and look at the... It's like, dude, okay, don't sit at home and type out tweets about it and then never do anything about it. Like, if you're that mad about it, see, the thing is, they're actually getting stuff done. That was kind of the point of my blog, was, as a conservative, there are a lot of principles that I would like to see America conserve. It doesn't mean we need to go back to the way everything was in, you know, 1770, when we were figuring it all out and finally establishing a country and our own culture. It doesn't mean that, but it means there's a lot of stuff that has made America a country that people will wait in line to come to. Don't throw it all out. And so when you're seeing stuff change and you're like, oh, look at all the stuff they're doing, it's like, dude, then combat it. Then let's do something about it. Like, man, stop complaining. They're proactive. They're getting stuff done. Now we have to. And like I said, when I saw the all the people give me feedback talking about their views and who they voted for and whatever, I mean, these are people that I love and admire, a lot of them. And they may have voted differently or have different views or whatever it is, but these are people that if I were in a political position, I would still work with, even though we're not completely aligned, because they're not terrible people. They're not these extreme examples. So yeah, we can work together, and there are things that they're going to get accomplished, but then also there's things that we need to get accomplished. Of course, the idea of coexistence, it's not going to work. I think it's a terrible concept to push, because it's not possible. It's literally not possible, coexistence. If you believe something is true, anything that is outside of that is contradictory to it. So everyone can't have a bunch of different truths and be like, all right, we're all going to coexist, because they can't. Like, truth is exclusive by nature. So there's no way they can all coexist. Anyway, that's not going to get off on that. But yeah, I don't know. It's ridiculous. And we as conservatives have to do better. And we've seen a lot of Democrats and Republicans and independents have come together through a lot of different issues, because we're for the first time in a long time, or for the first time recently, we're putting America or American people first, and it's not a political thing. It's not a party thing. It's just, this is it, man. This is our country. This is our community. At the end of the day, this is still my neighbor. Whether they have a different sign for a candidate in their yard than I do or not, like, we're still all contributing to the same society around us. We you know, we do need to work together here. So don't sit there and keep yelling and pointing fingers. Like, time for us to do something about it. Like, if you think about, the more stuff has been influenced in America, the more liberal it's become. That's the fact of the matter. If you look at everything, and there's times that change, you know, change is good if something bad needs to be changed, and there's things that are neutral that it's okay for them to be changed because it's not like an actual issue. But then you think about all the other stuff that's moved to the liberal side of the spectrum over the last 60 years, and I'm talking about in the blog, they've done that. They were being proactive. They have pushed for that to happen. So it's possible. So they're taking a stance. So stop complaining, take a stance back. It's that simple. So what's one thing I want to do better about it is just, you know, okay, here's my beliefs, here's my stance. If I really do think it's true, then I need to stand up and fight for it. So that's a little accountability for myself. So that was kind of like looking at a lot of stuff in November going on in the world, going on in, you know, your own personal life or whatever's going on. There's times that, you know, I'm the only conservative in an entire class, or the only conservative in a friend group, or I see people that I've seen the way their views have changed over time, and then I see the way mine have changed over time, and we're headed in opposite directions. So, I mean, there are a lot of factors at play, but I mean, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm trying to go with that. I'm just saying we all need to, everyone's taking a stance for what they believe in. So that's what we need to do. We need to do it, and we need to follow through with it. So that was kind of one of my personal things for the month, was kind of realizing that, okay, that's something we need to do a better job as conservatives. But then too, as Americans, as truly, okay, let's put all bias aside. Let's look at an issue objectively. Oh gosh, I don't even want to get into that. How much time do I have? We've lost the ability to define things, truly define things. We've also lost the ability to look at data as just data, or if you say data, and look at that and just focus on that and then not make it personal like it's data. There's one book I read. It's called, I think it was called Finished, The Art of Getting Things Done, I want to say, by John Acuff. And in one of those, I'll end it on this. In one of those chapters, it was kind of like a self-help book. And he was talking about how data is your best friend. I go, okay, now what does that mean? Because I'm not a big numbers guy. What do you mean by data is your best friend? Also, at the time, I don't have a business. I don't have anything. How's this going to help me? Well, he was talking about, he does like a webinar or some virtual conference or something every year. And he has a pretty decent following being a writer and blogger and stuff. He's written several books. So when he does something, a lot of people want to hear what he has to say. And if he offers a course, a lot of people are going to hop on it. So he sent out to his people on his newsletter like an invitation for this webinar or whatever he's going to do. And he's finding out how many people will be interested. And I'm probably going to misquote it because it's been a couple years since I read the book. But he pretty much sent out, you know, however many thousands, and he got 1,500 people replied and showed interest. So he's thinking, okay, 1,500 people, here's how much money the course costs, and here's what I'll be offering. He's looking at all the logistics of things, and he says, okay, 1,500 people. Now, I know, logically, not all 1,500 people are going to do this course. I know they're not. But if I could only get 10% of them to sign on and do this thing, here's how much money I'll make, and then here's how much it'll grow till next year. And he was looking at all the different outcomes. Okay, if I could only get 10%, that's a very modest 10%. That's 150. I could be way lowballing there. I could get, you know, 25%. But he said, I'll just do 10%. What does it mean? And his agent or his publicist or manager, whoever it was, came to him and said, John, let's pull last year's data when you did this event, and let's go off of that. Let's use that as precedent instead of you throwing out some hypothetical. And, of course, he was kind of bitter about it. He's like, no, because this is a pretty good model. 150 people, if they came through. And the guy was saying, you know, let's just look, John, let's just look. Well, he pulled the data from the year before, and he had like 3 or 4 people sign up and do it. Of course, he's shocked, and he's like, well, I only had that. No. Okay, well, my platform's grown, and I'll remodel it. There's no way. I had 1,500 people show interest. How did only 3 people sign on? And the guy's saying, well, okay, or it could have been 4. Either way, it was less than 5. And so now John has gone, well, shoot, it's not going to be 150. It'll probably be like 4. And so now his mindset has changed that, okay, I mean, going off of last year's data, it may be 4 people this year. Well, it's all said and done. He does the event. He had 6 people, maybe 7, sign up and do it. And his whole moral of the story was, had he gone off of his 150-person hypothetical of a modest 10% who showed interest in coming, following through, if he would have gone off that 150, he would have seen the 6 people sign up and do it and been so discouraged and so bitter and maybe even resentful that he will never offer it again. But instead, he looked at his 3-person, maybe 4-person commit. Four commitments the year before. And now he looks and goes, okay, I just doubled it from 3 to 6 or from 4 to 6, you know, an increase of 33%. Okay, that showed growth. And instead of being all, oh my gosh, I can't believe that 144 people less than what I thought showed up, now you go, okay, I had growth. And now you're a little bit encouraged. And now you can see, okay, I'm on the up and up here. And so his whole moral was, data truly is your best friend, because when you can look at it that, like, it's not personal, and you can actually get a better understanding, a better basis for your thinking that way. And so I started thinking about that. Okay, huh, that makes sense. I kind of see what he's saying. Because, yeah, you would be. People will give up on their goals, on their dreams, whatever, if they look and they set these goals for themselves and they fall way short. But if the data's there the whole time and tells them exactly what they can be looking for, the brain is a very powerful thing. It can look at that and go, okay, I went from 3 to 6 or 4 to 6 or 3 to 7, 4 to 7, whatever it is. That was good. That was a good year of growth, even though it wasn't a lot. Instead of being disappointed that you wanted your 150, and then even, you know, deep down you're thinking it could even be 500, you know, it could be a third show interest instead of 10%. So with all the stuff going on, it's amazing now, because the way we use words, there's been a lot. I'm not going to get deeper into politics and share stuff, but there's stuff where, you know, people will make a statement and then other people will cherry pick words from that statement, or they'll change the definition of it, and just to fit some political agenda or to fit their own bias, instead of being challenged and going, okay, hold on, maybe I'm not always right. It's like, okay, look at this person who's always wrong. Look at what they said, or look at these numbers. I mean, there's numbers being thrown out all the time. We're in the middle of COVID-19 still. Look at all the numbers. And of course, you're going to look for stuff that naturally reinforces your thinking, but we do not have the ability to like recognize data anymore and then be challenged on it and go, okay, wait a second. I know we're being told something, but the data here is completely different. I mean, I saw a great article earlier this week from John Hopkins, their newsletter. They released one where they did a breakdown of COVID deaths, and it didn't fit a lot of the media narrative, and they had so much backlash that they ended up pulling it and go, okay, well, we'll do further research. Sorry for putting it up. And I was like, dude, stand behind your work. But number two, it's like, that was just data. That was the absolute objective, unbiased truth was, this is it. And data, it's either it is or it isn't. And in this case, it was. Or in this case, it wasn't, whatever it was. There's no arguing that. That's what it is. But we're at the point now where we can't recognize that. That's a scary place to be in. We're at the point where words are changing, where definitions of things are changing, where, and I get sick of it too when I hear, you know, people that are think the way I do, and we just call everything we don't like, you know, oh, that's socialist, or that's Marxist, or that's whatever. And you're like, but it's not. But then when it is, you go, oh, that's socialist. And it's like, oh, okay, well, you just completely discredited yourself because you called everything socialist. That when you actually had somebody who came forward being openly socialist, you can't argue that anymore because you've discredited yourself. So you're seeing, you know, if that's not it, then don't call it that. And that's just kind of where we're at now as a society. Anyway, I don't even know I'm going on this rant. I guess the cigar's flowing now, baby. Anyway, thank you guys for putting up with that. I thought it'd be so nice, quick and easy on this thing. Stay on track. Instead, I just want 48 minutes. And if people want to get political, we'll get political. I got no problem doing it or having people come on. It was kind of appreciative. I'll end it. Josh, who came on, I think he was episode 8, maybe? Josh Vinson. And he read my blog, and he sent me 10 to maybe even longer than that, 10 plus minutes worth of feedback on it. And yeah, it was just very helpful. And he, you know, him and I don't see eye to eye politically, so it's kind of nice hearing his feedback and where he agreed and where he didn't understand what I was saying or would even challenge my thinking on it. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Let's do better. I don't know. I don't have a good quote to end it on. I had one, but it doesn't fit, so I'm not going to use it now since I went on my political rant. I'll use it for my special edition or something when I start ranting about sexuality in America or something. We'll figure it out. America, do better. And stuff that's working, let's continue to do it. Thank you guys for listening. Data is your best friend, okay? Numbers don't lie. Let's define the stuff we're saying, the stuff we're thinking, the stuff that we're calling people. If it doesn't mean that, then don't say it. And if the data shows up as true, objective, with no agenda, and it doesn't fit your thinking, let's just change our thinking. It's okay. That's growth. That's maturity. That's conducive. That's progress. That actually is true progress. We're talking about all the progressive stuff going on in America. That is true progress. Is when you can admit you're wrong. And, yeah, that is your best friend. Data is your best friend. And the data here says I've gone over 50 minutes, so I need to chill out. Thank you guys for listening if you've listened so far. Smoke and Mirrors, November 2020. I will see you guys. I guess, shoot, dude. Next one I record will be New Year's Eve or something. There we go. Let's roll. Okay. Cattle Call Podcast. Thank you guys for listening. See you on the other side.